You're listening to the Mind Menu podcast, episode 42, The Power of Perspective.
If you want a particular result in your life, but you're unable to get it, tune in to start training your brain and expanding your emotional intelligence to unlock the most powerful and underutilized performance tool that we have. It's the most important work you could do because it affects every area of your life.
Hello and welcome to another episode. In this session, we explore the power we have in the ability to choose perspective. This is something we have ultimate control over. So it's going to appeal to the control freak in you, but at the same time, it will set you free. Our perspective is our version of reality. We each have our own unique reality shaped by our inner world of thoughts, beliefs, values, and the resulting lens through which we see the world. When we open ourselves to seeing life through the lens of another, it is like looking through the telescope rather than a microscope. And with that added dimension comes personal growth. I recently came across an interview with Dr. Ian McGilchrist, who is a psychiatrist and writer, where he talks about his latest book titled The Matter with Things. And it goes a long way into explaining how our different parts of our brain work and perceive, particularly the left and right hemisphere. Through his work in practice and with patients of more severe pathologies, along with neuroimaging studies that support his findings, he teaches us how the left brain radically simplifies the input as it attempts to grasp and understand the complex world around us. It does so by trying to reduce the data to a construct it can predict and organize into a category, a schema, an algorithm, basically something that can provide us with some certainty about the world, which translates into having to be right to support the model we've just constructed. So it has a chronic bias to being certain, which closes down any possibility there could be another way or another perspective. This tendency is one that could be described as a contracting mindset, but it does so at the expense of having to reduce a very complex relational system into an isolated and almost singular event, and one that is also linear. So it misses the intricacies and the interconnectedness of most systems. This reductionist way of understanding the complex is often fraught with dangers as we become oblivious to the unintended consequences in our determination to select for a single objective outcome. On the emotional side of things, the left brain appears to process the more negative emotions such as anger, pessimism, and pride as it prioritizes the self. It looks for ways to usurp and dominate others so that we may have it better. A bit on the dark side, you might say. Whereas the right side of our brain is more open to new information, ideas, and creativity, and looking at all the possibilities. So it's much more curious than certain. It knows a lot more exists out there than what it could ever know to be true, which sounds more like an expanding mindset. It also deals with the more positive emotions in seeing the greater good and seeing the bigger picture. It's able to take on a more holistic view of things and can take in all the nuances and subtleties, which is where we might get our sixth sense from. So we have the seemingly opposites show up again, the divine dichotomy of life, the yin and the yang, as the Taoists put it. And the hope is that between the two, we are able to take a more balanced view of things. It was interesting to hear McGilchrist say that a person with severe schizophrenia is hyper-dominated by the left hemisphere, which is very logical in nature and can reason. Surprisingly then, they actually have a lot of internal consistency going on. But where they come undone is their inability to open up to the right side of their brain and consider other possibilities, or even just remain open to digesting the evidence of what is actually happening around them. And if it doesn't fit their internal narrative or what they deemed to be right, then it's discarded, which is where they begin to appear delusional. They deny the plain facts and maintain belief in what has proven right to them, complements of the left logical brain. So given the left brain provides us with the illusion of certainty and a model of the world we can rely on, then this is what becomes real and safe for us. It appears we are becoming more and more dominated by our left brain, which loves to devise systems and processes and reduce everything down to a simple, coherent equation, preferably with one variable, but usually two, to predict a cause and event relationship. In isolation of all the other parts to all the complex systems found in nature, this is the reductionist model of the world that makes sense to the left side of our brain. It also implies that it's easier to control and predict when we can rely on the process and protocols providing an alluring construct for governments and institutions to use. If we were educated to ask great questions and remain curious about what could also be possible, or what unintended consequences there could be if we reduce a complex system down to only one or two factors, then we would be much more holistic and open to consider all of the parts that go in to make up the whole. For instance, during the COVID pandemic, the governments around the world were in pursuit of a single outcome to ensure our physical safety and minimize loss of life. The massive fallout stemming from our social, financial, mental, and emotional states is still being felt as aftershocks. There's the classic climate debate, and the snapshot we've selected for study and debate is carbon dioxide and methane, which seem to be the two variables we've fixated on that is responsible for being the cause for whatever atmospheric changes in temperature have occurred over the span of human life on Earth, which is the effect. In the book titled Inconvenient Facts, author Gregory Wrightson, a geologist who spent more than 35 years investigating the Earth and its processes, presents many facts from Earth measurements that flies in the face of the causal relationship between carbon dioxide and temperature. The infamous hockey stick curve of Michael Mann that sent the world in a panic has since been proven incorrect. It tried to depict the temperature over the last millennium with a flat line over the first 900 years and with the last 100 years from the year 1900 rising sharply, coinciding with the beginning of the Industrial Revolution and steadily increasing carbon dioxide levels. The IPCC, the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change, have since used other relatively short data sets from actual measurements taken by satellite and balloon data. But because it's such a thin slice of the total data collected, we are getting a microscopic view, and so we're not seeing the larger picture or the larger trends. Historic carbon dioxide levels have accurately been measured in trapped air bubbles from the longest continuous accumulations of ice in Antarctica and Greenland, with records going back 810,000 years and 150,000 years respectively. 65 million years of temperature data from oxygen isotope records of deep ocean sediment cores show the Earth is cycling through ice ages and interglacial warming periods, and the current increase in carbon dioxide and temperature has been a normal occurrence on planet Earth. The current uptick in temperature fits into this trend where we are showing another 100,000 year interglacial warming peak, which have cycled over the last 800,000 year period, before it descends again into the next ice age cycle. But don't worry, that graph is showing it should be some tens of thousands of years away. Those with agendas are ignoring the actual measurements and sticking with their theoretical models to prove how two variables, carbon dioxide and temperature, have a causal relationship. But let's go with the populist theory and say this one is man-made. How do you account for the cause of these same warming and cooling cycles over the past 800,000 years? It's become an inconvenient truth that temperatures have always changed. and the same cycles have always repeated over this time. According to the Hadcrut-4 dataset, the global mean temperature remained stable from 1998 to 2016 as carbon dioxide relentlessly increased, shooting holes in this causal relationship. An increase of 120 parts per million of carbon dioxide since the Industrial Revolution may seem significant when viewed through the microscope of current times. But geologically, it is not significant and certainly not extreme. Over the past 140 years, atmospheric carbon dioxide levels have been falling from 2,500 parts per million to 300 parts per million and have risen to 420 parts per million since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Now, the climate alarmists have said that 400 parts per million was a tipping point for the Earth, which would have dire existential consequences. Tipping points are not science. They are propaganda or just another perspective. What should be alarming to humanity is the scientific fact that if the world's carbon dioxide concentrations halved from its current level, agriculture would collapse and humanity would starve. If carbon dioxide levels reached 150 parts per million, most terrestrial plant life would become extinct, along with all the animal and human life, which depend on plants. Global warming has now morphed into climate change because the planet refused to keep getting warmer as the carbon dioxide concentrations increased. We now have media-driven hysteria of fueling a mass delusion that carbon dioxide is bad for the planet. And now, owls, of all things, are being blamed. The more carbon dioxide we have in the atmosphere, the more plants will grow and the more carbon dioxide will be drawn down. We are ignoring that planet Earth has been managing climate change for the past 4.5 billion years. This is another classic example of the perception bias we have of the part as opposed to the whole. When you take a thin slice snapshot of anything, you get entirely different results. Take another macroscopic view of a chair, for example. It exhibits the characteristics of it being still and solid in nature. We are looking at the whole and perceiving it to be a certain way. Whereas if we were to take the microscopic view of just a part at the cellular level, we would perceive it to be in a constant state of motion and comprised of mainly empty space. If a whole is just made up of the parts, then which one is correct? Both can be seemingly opposite and contradictory in nature, and yet both perceptions are correct. We could support either view with all the evidence you would need to satisfy a jury. It's just how we are perceiving it that completely changes our experience of it. The subject stays the same. It's our perception or point of view that differs. Our left brain likes to take snapshots of everything to compartmentalize and simplify, as if it's all static and singular, which can be separated into parts, and we, in some ways, lose the substance of it when we try to reduce it. We can even quite literally lose sight of it. We make it fit our hypothesis to help us make sense of it, and we close off any contradictory information that might prove it to be wrong, which is unsettling since the world is not how we thought it should be. Ian McGilchrist writes, quote, "Our talent for division, for seeing the parts, is of staggering importance, second only to our capacity to transcend it in order to see the whole," end of quote. For this to happen, I think we need to start tapping into our right hemisphere. The reality is we are not dealing with static parts. Everything is in motion or flow. Nature is always in process and full of such complex systems, our brain would struggle to grasp the vast sea of what is unknown to us. There is always the ebb and flow, the seasons, the cycles, new life and decay, growth and atrophy. It is the tension of the opposites that keeps everything in balance, in harmony, as it is with music and the motion of waves with its peaks and troughs. We all have our highs and lows. We take the good with the bad. Life is both majestic and tragic. This is quite literally the very nature of life and the world we live. If we kept reminding ourselves of this, it would help us to open up to an expanding mindset in being open to new information, in staying aware of the knowledge that the equal and opposite exists for everything. We could cease with the dogma, the absolute and closed state of mind, if only we could stay curious and creative in our approach, then so much more would be revealed to us. Just this past week, I've come across so many instances of the differences in perspective and how a simple shift can change a mood, an attitude, and ultimately a person's life. I listened to a TED talk as part of my university studies titled "What Trauma Taught Me About Happiness." During her recovery from a devastating accident, Lindsay Roy developed ideas and ways of coping for overcoming the brain's natural negativity bias. A tragic boating accident almost claimed Lindsay's life and left her with an amputated left leg, severely injured right leg, and injured right arm. Through a challenging recovery process, Lindsay learned impactful lessons on how to harness disruption and find clarity in chaos. She got stuck in comparing her current situation, post-accident, to her pre-accident, able-bodied self, which only brought her misery and anguish. She realized she was never going to win at that game or ever feel happy about her situation. But when she changed it to looking at her progress at week 27 and compared it to week 7, instead, or embrace the second chance at life she was given compared to ending it prematurely, she was once again on an upward trajectory and feeling grateful and hopeful. In a self-reflective assessment I just completed, I contemplated the additional layers of suffering I was creating for myself when I compared my son, who had been sick for the past 2.5 years and having missed most of his school in that time, to the happy, healthy, fully functioning boy that he was before everything changed. It was going to be far less painful if I used a terminal diagnosis, for example, as my point of comparison in looking at the upside. Even though it was a bad situation, there are so many that are given much worse. And then my husband and I were remembering back to the woes of the GFC and hearing a friend's version of their hell and thinking, oh, if only we had that. I would have been content to call it heaven compared to what we were facing at that time. We say it's all relative, but how many of us consciously expand our perspective to include the upside in what's good and whole and true? If we kept stretching this snapshot of our life out to incorporate the whole, we would probably find the same cycles as the climate oscillating between ice ages and interglacial warming, the good and the bad, the tragic and majestic. Then it would all make sense, and we would know that change is inevitable and will take us around the next peak or trough. We just need to hang on for the ride. I was looking through a research paper titled "The Impact of Perspective Changes a Cognitive Reappraisal Strategy on Effect," and it mentioned how a variety of psychological disorders are associated with a narrowing of information processing bandwidth. When people see suicide as their only answer to their situation, can you see how narrow their snapshot has become of this day, this moment, when they see how a devastating permanent course of action is the only solution to a very temporary problem, and how the pain and suffering they're drowning in is being caused by the very narrow way they're thinking about it or processing it. They can't see it any other way, and they think this pain or situation will never change and that they'll be trapped in this doom forever. They see suicide as their only means of escape. This is an extreme example, but we do fall into a similar trap when we become dominated by our left brain, which means while ever we have a human brain, any one of us could potentially find ourselves in this situation, blindsided by the mechanisms of our left hemisphere. Dr. Ian McGilchrist writes, "Unfortunately, the left hemisphere, knowing less, thinks it knows more. It is a good servant, but a ruinous, a peremptory master. And the predictable outcome of assuming the role of master is the devastation of all that is important to us, or should be important, if we really knew what we were about." It's a powerful reminder for us to question how we are perceiving something and what our snapshot of comparison is. When we get trapped in a reductionist mentality in which we seek to reduce or narrow the information processing bandwidth down to a single objective or measure of effect, and we treat it as a separate system in isolation to any other variable or impact it may have on all the other elements, then we invariably lose sight of the big picture and we can only make it mean one thing. When something doesn't go the way we had planned or hoped or expected, we judge the event as a failure, a disappointment, or that something bad has happened. But if we were to expand our snapshot to consider how it could be for us or how it could work to our advantage or betterment, then we could contemplate the lesson and look for the hidden opportunity or possible upside of where it could potentially lead. We would become far more creative in how we could transform it or transcend it. My daughter shared her bigger perspective with me recently, and I could see how this has helped to transform her life. She had been living in the worldview of her auntie, who was stuck in the mourning of her brother, being my late husband. And my daughter declared to me that she had moved into peace about losing her father. She couldn't see anything good that had come from the place her auntie was still living in, and so she began to broaden her snapshot. She shared the gains in her life that she could be thankful for, including her two younger brothers that she otherwise wouldn't have in her life. And it has since expanded and opened her up in ways that have wowed me and her. This is life-changing stuff. This is the power of perspective. And just to end with a funny, my husband showed me a picture this week of a library book that was partly covered by the shelf that came up halfway to cover the bottom half of the words. The title of the book was "My Daddy is a Giant." But in only seeing the top half of the words, it made the title read the complete opposite of that. And I've used it as the cover for this episode. If you have a look, you'll see what I mean. It's quite offensive. It's a visual parody of this concept, but the mental one we create is very similar. So guys, I invite you to explore the right hemisphere of your brain. Let the love and light in. Stay curious and open to new information. In seeing the whole and sensing the nuances, the unseen, and trusting your intuition. When you notice you become petty and small-minded, just know you've gone back to the dark side on the left in becoming fused with your thoughts and the very narrow view of things. In thinking that you are right and everyone else is wrong, hold the tension on both sides. Exercise them both in order to keep the balance on that all too elusive perspective. Thanks for listening, and my hope for you is that you never see the world in quite the same way again. We'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, you have to come and check out Mind Scholars. It's my monthly coaching membership where we take all of this work to a much deeper level. We study it and then apply it to the everyday in every way. So if you want to take your life to a whole new level, join me in Mind Scholars over at themindmanual.com/join. I look forward to seeing you there.